Welcome to VMN Volume 3, Episode 23. The date is October 16th, 2023. VMN is produced and transmitted from unceded Abenaki territory of so-called Vermont. The horrors coming out of Israel-Palestine have been bringing out the worst in many people. The attacks on Israeli civilians and the corresponding whole-scale killing of Palestinian civilians in Gaza has created fertile ground for Islamophobia and anti-Semitism. In this episode, I'm rebroadcasting a discussion of anti-Semitism on the left that was initially recorded on Tuesday, May 4th, 2021 at Yivel Institute for Jewish Research. Many thanks to Spencer Sunshine and Yivel for permission to use this material. It is particularly relevant at the present moment. The original video can be found at https://yivo.org/leftists with a capital L and at https://spencersunshine.com/2021/04/06/yivo-las. As the video description states, this discussion was moderated by Spencer Sunshine. This panel will feature Zena Arnold, Shane Burley, Keith Kahn-Harris, and Joshua Leffer. The audio was extracted from that video and was edited to level out volume and to try to deal with garbled speech that happens when internet connections fail. I also edited out long silences. I hope you will find this discussion informative and enlightening.
Welcome to the Yivo Institute for Jewish Research, virtually. My name is Alex Weiser. I'm the Director of Public Programs of Yivo. And we're really happy to have you all with us for this conversation, Leftists on Left-Wing Anti-Semitism. Today's event is very much the brainchild of Spencer Sunshine. Spencer Sunshine is a researcher, writer, and activist regarding the far right, as well as anti-Semitic currents on the left. In a moment, I'm going to hand it over to Spencer, who will introduce the program and speak a bit more about it. But in the meanwhile, for those of you that don't know Yivo, just a word about Yivo. Yivo is a special place for the contemplation and celebration of Jewish history and Jewish culture. We have a library and an archive which has over 400,000 books and over 23 million documents. Researchers from around the world use our collections for their work, and we also make this culture accessible via public programs like this one, education initiatives such as classes, we teach Yiddish and other classes in Jewish history and culture, and exhibitions. So thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you'll be a part of our community if you're new. And without further ado, I'm gonna hand it over to Spencer.
All right, well, thank you all for watching. And as always, thank you, Alex, for helping set this up. Alex always helps me set all these presentations up. So as someone who's been active on the left for several decades, the topic of left-wing anti-Semitism is always a source of endless fascination to me. And it's obviously an obsession of others too, because the left is constantly dragged down into scandals about this issue. This includes with Occupy Wall Street, the Women's March, and recent events concerning the Labour Party in Britain. But no matter how many times this happens, no matter how many scandals there are, the left never has a real internal reckoning with this issue. Although most of us today associate the question with the Israel-Palestine conflict, in fact, it's much broader than that. It's a problem that's as old as the left itself, as the views of many early 19th century socialists were intertwined with anti-Semitism, and it's continued up through the present. Even today on the left, we find anti-Semitism bound up with issues that have nothing to do with the Middle East. These include critiques of finance capital, conspiracy theories more generally, and the left's relationship to openly anti-Semitic political groups. There's even the occasional presence of Holocaust deniers in left-wing circles, as we saw here in New York City a few years ago with one speaking at the Brooklyn Commons space. But of course, the question today is most frequently mixed up with Israel-Palestine. The questions there include claims that the Zionist lobby controls US policies, as well as ongoing discussions about if left-wing versions of anti-Zionism reflect anti-Semitism or not. So as a quick aside, when I talk about the left here, I'm referring primarily to the English-speaking world, And also, who I'm referring to are those who are openly critical of capitalism. So anarchists, communists, democratic socialists, and the like. Here in the United States, this would mean people around the political temperature of DSA, AOC, Bernie Sanders, and moving to the left of that. There is a lot of discussion about this issue from outside of the left. Much of it is, of course, from right-wingers, including those who use it as a cudgel to delegitimize the left as a whole. But these same criticisms also come from liberals and centrists, including many mainstream Jewish organizations. The one thing that unites these criticisms, in my mind, is that with almost no exceptions, they never show any understanding about what's going on inside of the left. And nor do they acknowledge the left's internal landscape. For example, that different groups and individuals have different takes on this question, and some areas of the left are better on it and some are worse. In general, the left is talked at, it's not talked with. And specifically, more specifically, the dialogue that does exist inside of the left about left-wing anti-Semitism is ignored. So this panel seeks to highlight this specific dialogue and has attempted to assemble representatives illustrating a variety of opinions on this issue. Now, I'm sure that each viewer will hear things today by the different panelists, some of which they will wholeheartedly agree with, and they'll also hear other statements that will absolutely infuriate them. In a way, we'll make it a typical YUVO panel. That said, I want to emphasize that the panel itself does not represent the left's opinions as a whole. So first off, most people on the left don't think about this question at all. Second, as you might expect, I've excluded quite a number of people who I at least consider do hold anti-Semitic views on this question. And I don't think their opinion, because I don't think their opinions belong on a panel of this kind. I have specifically included leftists who, to a greater or lesser extent, either hold anti-Semitic opinions or are openly tolerant of those who do. And the second category is actually far more broader than those who hold, for example, conspiratorial theories. So everyone on this panel meets a minimum requirement in that they do believe that there is some kind of anti-Semitism on the left and that that anti-Semitism should be dealt with. Also, this debate is more developed in Europe than the United States for reasons that are both historical and contemporary, and we'll get into this in the questions. And the makeup of this panel does reflect this. We have members from Germany and Britain who are joining us. Last, any serious attempt to get the left to address this issue will, in my mind, never be the result of outside pressure. It can only happen from an internal dialogue. And so while this panel will not resolve this issue, just as no declaration is going to be able to define away anti-Semitism, if the panel can contribute, even in a small way, to the left having a more reflective and proactive approach to this, I believe that it will have succeeded. And this, I do believe, is an achievable goal. So presentation is gonna be done a little differently. I'll explain the structure of the panel. First, each of the four panelists will give a short presentation about their views. After that, I'm gonna ask some thorny questions. I'll ask one, each question all the panelists will answer. And then, because there's so many different angles of this that I think need to be gotten at, I'm gonna have something unusual. We're gonna ask a lightning round, and the panelists are gonna answer. Well, I'll go into this with the panelists, yes, no, or it's complicated, just to get through some of these questions, and that will be at the end. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first panelist. He is Keith Kahn-Harris. He's a senior lecturer at Leo Beck College in London, and his most recent book is Strange Hate, Anti-Semitism, Racism, and the Limits of Diversity. Keith, I'll hand it to you.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank Ivo and Spencer Sunshine for having me on this panel. I hope I can add to something to the discussion that draws on but isn't limited to my experience of engaging with the issue of left anti-Semitism in the British context. Today we are more aware than ever of how issues that we deal with in our own countries are also present in others. However, the flattening effect of globalization and the online world is such that I think we often underestimate the considerable differences between the way controversies over left anti-Semitism play out in different contexts. I hope, therefore, that my remarks today are cognizant of that. So what is left anti-Semitism? As Spencer mentioned, there is a considerable history of this. There's a distinctive left anti-Semitism tradition, but I'm not going to focus historically today. Rather, I want to highlight a specific aspect of today's leftist politics present in a number of countries that makes anti-Semitism at least possible. And I'm going to illustrate this with an example of what I consider to be a manifestation of left anti-Semitism. And I am putting it in the chat box now. This is a tweet from Kerri-Anne Mendoza, the editor of the British leftist online publication, The Canary. And this is part of a long thread railing against what she saw as the weaponization of anti-Semitism smears against Jeremy Corbyn. And one tweet claimed, "It's gross and the single most sickening smear campaign in my lifetime. It trivializes anti-Semitism. It permits white liberals to declare anti-Zionist Jews anti-Semites. It permits largely white Reform Jews to declare any sort of Jew as somehow illegitimate." Now, what's interesting here is that Mendoza is framing her defense of Jeremy Corbyn as a defense of one kind of Jew against another kind of Jew. And what's striking here is the reference to largely white Reform Jews. Yet Mendoza clearly didn't really understand what Reform Jews are. In the UK, they're a substantial but still a minority of the Jewish community. And in any case, the Jewish coalition against Corbyn extended across much but no means all of the community. I suspect that what she meant was Jews who are neither secular nor Haredi. But what's important here is the sense of entitlement to pontificate about the intricate internal politics of British Jewry with very limited knowledge. And I think it is that entitlement that is widespread on the left. It often takes the form of a kind of philo-Semitism that upholds secular leftist anti-Zionist Jews and sometimes Haredi Jews as the good Jews. Whilst this entitlement may sometimes derive from well-meaning ignorance, the refusal to allow an ethno-religious group to define who it is walks a very dangerous path. And it's striking that this entitlement is generally manifested by the left with regards to Jews, but not generally to other ethnic and religious groups. What this isn't, though, is anti-Semitism as it is sometimes understood, as antipathy towards all Jews everywhere for all time. Rather, this is an example of what I call in my book selective anti-Semitism. That is a philo-Semitic love of certain kinds of good Jews with a rejection of other sorts of bad Jews. Of course, this selectivity is not confined to the left. On the right, there is also the same combination of love and hate, but reversed this time so that right-wing Zionist Jews are the good Jews. While selectivity has become normative across wide swathes of the political spectrum, I actually expect much, much more from the anti-racist left. So how did this emerge in recent years? I'm going to briefly suggest a few reasons. First of all, the emergence of anti-racism as an identity has made it very difficult for many on the left to show humility about their own blind spots. Second, there has been a widespread naivety about what living in diverse societies in an anti-racist way actually involves. A diverse society is not necessarily one in which all minority groups are minded to see the world in a left anti-racist way. Third, there is a widespread disappointment with Jews on sections of the left for becoming privileged and embracing nationalism. And this often stems from a highly problematic assumption that the experience of oppression is necessarily a source of insight. Jews, given the gift of insight through centuries of oppression followed by genocide, did not subsequently behave as they were supposed to, with a self-sacrificial refusal of privilege and power. Finally, there is sometimes an overtly simplistic view of privilege on the left that sees it as an irrevocable status, as something that cannot be lost, but only overthrown. And this takes little account of the ways in which Jews and others, when they achieve a degree of privilege, do not necessarily feel secure. And it's those last two reasons that helps to explain the dividing line between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. A critique of Zionism as a form of nationalism should be nothing more than an extension of a wider critique of ethno-state and state power. Yet too often, anti-Semitism is predicated on a sense of disappointment and incomprehension of how Jews, of all people, could have fallen. Further, anti-Semitism is often framed not as one struggle, but as the struggle, one that has foundational consequences. So the exceptionalism that sees Zionism as a unique moral failure, whose overturning is of critical world importance, I would say that that is anti-Semitism. My answer to anti-Semitism on the left is paradoxical and a little outrageous. The problem I see it is one of love. It is loving one particular image of what a Jew should be that leads to disappointment and rage when it proves not to be correct. Love is unsustainable as the basis for anti-racism. Anti-racist solidarity should not be a reward for good behavior. I therefore want to suggest an anti-racism that verges on the misanthropic, that upholds what solidarity as its highest ideal. It is not nice, it is awkward, it is uncomfortable, but that difficulty is what anti-racism should be all about. There are also specific political gains to be had from Sullen politics. By acknowledging that Jews should not experience racism regardless of their politics, we also create the conditions for Jews to be secure enough to question their politics. One doesn't have to be a Zionist to recognize that the Jewish embrace of Israel was hardly a surprise given Jewish history. And one doesn't have to be a Zionist to recognize that if Jews are to question their support for Israel, they need to have the right to support Israel in the first place. Jews on the left can help their comrades on the left to embrace this difficulty by refusing to be loved. When non-Jewish comrades start getting starry-eyed about the Bund, Jewish neo-Bundists should remind them that that doesn't mean you can forget about other sorts of Jews. Indeed, I think that all Jews of whatever political persuasion should respond to the merest hint of philo-Semitism with the rejoinder, "So you like Jews like me, do you? Well, you still have to accept the existence of Jews who aren't like me." So I think that Jews have provided a service to the left in testing to destruction naive assumptions of what diversity and anti-Semitism really mean. Now, of course, comes the hard part. Did you hear any of that?
We did. Okay, thank you, Keith. Next up is going to be Brooklyn-based writer Joshua Leifer. He's worked on the editorial staff of Dissent in 972 magazine and is currently assistant editor at Jewish Currents.
Hi everyone. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you to Spencer for the invitation to speak here. Thank you to YIVO for having me. I think if my bubby knew that I was speaking on a YIVO event, she would be totally baffled that that such a thing was possible, but hopefully I will do her memory some justice here. I'm also honored to talk with all of the people here. I've learned a lot from their writing and from dialogue with them in other spaces, and I'm excited to do this with them. I'm going to give a brief outline of where I'm going to try to go in this time. I'm not sure if I'll be able to get to everything, but I'm sure we'll get into it, even if not in the first initial brief. I want to first talk about a kind of zoom out and look, I guess you could say, at a kind of meta critique of how we talk about anti-Semitism broadly on the left in English and in the United States. This meta critique will include the tensions between scholarly and activist discourses around anti-Semitism, and I think there is a big tension between these. And I also want to raise some questions about the ends of labeling speech as anti-Semitic and what might be the political project of something that focuses on anti-Semitism as a problem to point out. To begin, I want to start with the argument that NYU professor David Engel makes in his essay, Away from a Definition of Anti-Semitism. Without vulgarizing this too much, I think the argument that he makes can be distilled to the idea that anti-Semitism is not a particularly useful word for scholars in understanding when and how Jews find themselves in situations of victimization throughout history. As Engel writes, no necessary relations among particular instances of violence, hostile depiction, agitation, discrimination, and private unfriendly feeling across time and space can be presumed. Engel describes and uses anti-Semitism as a historically specific term, and for him, it's a term that arose at the end of the 19th century, in part as a term used by people to describe their own politics of an antipathy towards Jews, but also in part as a kind of mobilizing rhetoric for the people who opposed them, among them Jews who wanted to fight anti-Semitism. So Engel calls this anti-Semitism as a term a socio-semantic convention created in the 19th century and sustained throughout the 20th for communal and political ends. I think what Engel writes here is actually gets at an important tension that undergirds a lot of the debate about anti-Semitism on the left. And it's certainly one that, as an editor of Jewish Currents, I've watched play out firsthand. I think this tension might roughly be described as between the intellectual inquiry into the position of Jews in the 21st century, a kind of materialist inquiry into our current situation, and also the imperatives of political organizing in the same period. And these are not always aligned. In other words, and I think this is important to keep in mind in this conversation, the demands of intellectual inquiry and those of political mobilization are not always aligned. I'm personally sympathetic to Engel's argument in the scholarly sense, but it's also clear to me that that a political response to what is called anti-Semitism in the Anglophone world today is an important task for the left. It's an important task of self-criticism, but it's also an important strategic task. And as this is because, as Spencer mentioned in the beginning, the Zionist right and the far right have their own political program for how to fight anti-Semitism. I've taken to calling this the theory of Jewish total victory. It's a deeply pessimistic view of Jewish history that sees the only possible end to anti-Semitism through the vanquishing of the Jews' enemies by any means necessary. In Israel, this obviously takes on a particular settler eliminationist logic, support for forced transfer of the Palestinians from Israel. While in the US, it looks like Jewish alignment with the white nationalist right and the emerging kind of neo-reactionary firmament on the basis of perceived common enemies, in this case, in the far right's imagination, Black Lives Matter, anti-imperialists, the left more broadly. But we also see this in the liberal center and organizations say like the ADL, which has its own answer to how to fight anti-Semitism, which is that the liberal state can act as the protector of Jews as well as other minorities through hate crimes legislation, civil rights statutes. And I think in this, there is a sort of historical lineage to the sort of pre-emancipation paradigm of the Stadlenut, which we can get into. And I think that I have my own critiques of it. But the question then is, where does this leave the left? Very smart Jewish organizers on the left recognized that during the Trump years in particular, American Jews were at the risk of recruitment by the right. And they, as the right seized on instances of alleged left anti-Semitism. This right-wing strategy involved using basically allegations of anti-Semitism in a range of instances. We all kind of know them because I certainly feel like I've lived in a kind of ongoing, traumatic, infinite, recursive sequence of these accusations. And this was, this was a tactic that the right had gotten quite good at. And so left-wing organizers took what I think was a form of, or the structure of the strategy and sought to appropriate it as their own, often interpreting ambiguous comments as latent with anti-Semitic tropes. I don't think this is a great form of analyzing actual anti-Semitism and understanding the place of Jews in the world, but I recognize that there was certainly a political utility to the discourse of tropes in the moment. But I think now that we are a little bit further out from the crisis sense that kind of, I think, at least in the last couple of years, began acutely with the Tree of Life shooting in Pittsburgh, I think we have to ask what's intended by the act of labeling and grouping things as anti-Semitism. Is there in fact a left political program that can be based around this? I feel comfortable expressing my own ambivalence on this question in this forum. It's harder to do that on the page. I also think that one of the problems with grounding a politics and combating anti-Semitism is that it presumes a unified Jewish interest where there is none. I think the hardest thing in contemporary American politics, at least for me, is the presumption that all Jews share an idea of what Jewish flourishing and thriving looks like. We don't. There are intense, immense, irreconcilable disagreements among Jews, whether they are left-wing, Haredi, Reform, Modern Orthodox. No Jew or no Jews from these from different groups, I think, could come up with a political arrangement in which we would all feel safe and feel like the arrangement was just. And so I think that that is also important to keep in mind when discussing anti-Semitism. Of course, there are real stakes within the left. And I think, as we've all mentioned, anti-Semitism has long been haunted by, or the left has long been haunted by anti-Semitism as its kind of contorted other, the anti-Semitism of fools, as a phrase where many of us are familiar with. And I do think that in a kind of ad hoc pragmatic sense, we can think about certain kinds of anti-Semitism that do exist on the left. They're bad in part because they lead to bad depoliticizing analysis, and that's bad for the left as a movement. They're also strategically bad in that they open up left movements to delegitimization, critique, and even state repression. To my mind, the three most prevalent ones in my experience as a person on the left in the United States are conspiracism. I actually think this is relatively rare on the US left, and that might have to do with the fact that there are a lot of Jews on the left. But I rarely hear the talk of Rothschilds, and in the same sense that my understanding has happened in Britain. I think there is also a kind of vulgar anti-imperialism that takes the form of an overstatement of Jewish or Israeli influence in foreign affairs. This is bad analysis more than it is, I think, dangerous to Jews as such. I know my time is up, so I'll just finish with the third one. And the third is the third type that I think is quite, and that worries me the most, in part because it is difficult to rebut in light of what Israeli and Jewish leaders say. This third kind of anti-Semitism is an essentialism about Zionist violence as an expression or as the apotheosis of Judaism, that there is something Jewish about the violence of the occupation. Of course, this sense is reinforced when, say, Israel's leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu or leaders of the ADL or AIPAC claimed that Israel speaks on behalf of Jews. It is not surprising to me that people who are not Jewish find this terrain very hard to navigate. It should go without saying that none of these three kinds of anti-Semitism move the left anywhere towards justice, and certainly do not, you know, help the Jews. But I think that in general, we're at the very beginning of actually understanding what anti-Semitism in the United States and in the US left looks like and how to fight it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Josh. Next up is Zina Arnold. She is a postdoctoral lecturer in Berlin and the author of a forthcoming book that I am very much looking forward to in English, From Occupation to Occupy, an Empirical Study of Anti-Semitism Discourses in the Contemporary U.S. Left.
Thank you. Thanks to Yivu for organizing this, in particular to Spencer. I think I've been talking about these issues with Spencer for well over a decade, and I'm excited that this is happening. And I want to start off, I guess, with a sense of surprise. So in the left, it seems to be kind of a well-known fact that we live in a society that is structured by sexism, structured by heteronormativity, by racism, and whether this is simply seen as kind of a glitch in an otherwise potentially harmonious social makeup, or whether bourgeois society is seen as necessarily producing these evils, is one of the factors that may distinguish the liberal from the radical left. Nevertheless, given the omnipresence of kind of these relations of power, it comes as no surprise that also among leftists, a whole lot of sexism, racism, heteronormativity, ableism, and so on can be found. Some of it is overt, some of it is more subtle. And of course, there have been responses to it. Women's consciousness raising groups in the 80s and other safe spaces, Black nationalism and other separatist projects, call-out culture, awareness trainings on critical masculinity and critical whiteness for allies, and many more. So, and certainly not all of these counter strategies are endorsed by all, and not all of them have been successful. But you can probably see where I'm getting at. The strange absence of acknowledging anti-Semitism as a potential element of the left and dealing with it in a similar fashion. And I think this double standard, I would call it, is remarkable. And I think it's strange for many reasons, including the long history of anti-Semitism on the left. And I was asked to include an example, and I certainly didn't know where to start, because, you know, we could go back to the populists and their personified notion of power and capital leading to condemnations of the Rothschilds, of Shylocks, We could look at the outcomes of a very rigid Marxist-Leninist worldview in the Stalinist anti-Semitic show trials of the USSR and Czechoslovakia in the 1950s, or the persecution of Jewish communities in the former GDR, so an alleged anti-fascist state. And we could look at the development of anti-Zionism in, or kind of anti-Zionism as a key element in the West European and in the US American left after the Six-Day War in 1967, which in several cases has blurred the lines between critiques of Israeli policies and Jews, whether that was by members of the CPUSA or the SWP or even small guerrilla groups like the New World Liberation Front that threatened attacks on Jewish Americans as a reaction to Israeli policies in the 1970s. And we could, and we may do that later, maybe discuss the fact that Jewish women were kicked off the Chicago Dyke March in 2017 because the rainbow flag with the Star of David that they carried allegedly made other members feel unsafe. Or, last example, closer to my home, we can speculate about who in Cologne just 2 days ago defaced a stumbling stone. Those are kind of golden stepping stones that are embedded in the pavement, and they can be found in many places all over Germany to commemorate Jews that were deported in the Holocaust from houses nearby. We do not know who that was, but we know that the graffiti on it read BDS. And this double standard is strange also because, of course, anti-Semitism has an appeal for leftists. And I think that is because, well, it's more than a simple form of prejudice, but rather an ideology, a worldview, and a worldview that aims at explaining society's ills. So it has an answer at hand. And of course, well, the answer that it gives is it's the Jews. But we as leftists also, we constantly want to explain, we want to give answers, we want to change the world, right? So we are looking for answers. Why is the society so sick? And some of these answers include capitalism, capitalists, war, imperialism, Israel, power, the media, ruling elite. And some answers may link up to anti-Semitic stereotypes, to anti-Semitic tropes. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying that the left is inherently anti-Semitic. Of course not. I'm saying that much like racism or sexism, what we should do is A, acknowledge that anti-Semitism has been and is part of left movements, B, understand how it is expressed, C, analyze why that is, and D, find strategies against it. And particularly, I think we also need to have that conversation because otherwise the right will do so. And in fact, as you know, it already does. And it does so in order to slander a whole movement. And we have seen that with accusations against Occupy Wall Street, against Black Lives Matter. There are many examples. And I think certainly this requires a lot from us. Understanding how anti-Semitism is expressed means acknowledging that just like racism, it can take coded forms, more coded forms than simply saying Jewish bankers rule Wall Street, even though I have seen signs along those lines at the Occupy Wall Street encampment in New York. But we know that forms of white supremacy, forms of sexism and so on the left, they are usually expressed more subtly. And of course, that's the same with anti-Semitism. And that's what makes it so important to look at debates around Israel, because they can be a form of indirectly communicating anti-Semitism. And I think the other step, analyzing why anti-Semitism exists on the left, means also going back to our theoretical foundation. So our critiques of capitalism, why is it often enough seen as held up by a small circle of white Wall Street men, rather than acknowledging its systemic characters? Our critiques of racism, why are Jews only perceived as white? Our critiques of authoritarianism and masculinity, so why are radical Islamist movements and their anti-Semitic policies such as Hamas hardly ever criticized when talking about the Middle East conflict? Our foundations such as post-colonialism and intersectionality, why do they often enough seem to exclude Jews? And of course, this does not mean that we cannot say anything anymore. Anti-Semitism is not everywhere. So to put it differently, because I had to include examples of what's not anti-Semitic, yes, it's okay to criticize Israeli policies or to be against all nation states, including an Israeli and a Palestinian ones. Yes, it's okay to be a secular atheist who is skeptical of religious expressions, including those by Jews. And yes, it's okay to be anti-capitalist as long as there's no George Soros, Alan Greenspan, or other puppet masters who are seen as the masterminds of exploitation. And I think finding strategies against anti-Semitism on the left is the last step, and it requires having spaces like this. And I'm really of the deep conviction that having these conversations and these fights and struggles among the left will make us stronger, because not only will it strengthen our fight against anti-Semitism, it will also hopefully sharpen our analysis of society, because it makes us redefine our theoretical foundations. And I think it will make us more inclusive to Jewish comrades, and it will hopefully enable us to build bridges to others who are targeted by this current new wave of anti-Semitism and racism that is coming in full force from white nationalists and from the radical right globally.
Okay, thank you very much, Sina. I'm glad your connection held as well. And last, for the presentations, we're going to have Shane Burley. He's an anti-fascist writer in Portland, Oregon, and author of the new released book, Why We Fight, Essays on Fascism, Resistance, and Surviving the Apocalypse.
Thanks so much for having me here. And a big thank you to YIVO. They're such a treasure, and I'm hoping I won't muck up their programming. And I'm just really glad to be a part of something so great like that. So when kind of thinking about what we're calling left-wing anti-Semitism, I was trying to think about what the core fulcrums are. What are the centers of this? And there's really two places that people tend to talk about it. It's not the only places where anti-Semitism will creep into the left, but it is the two primary spots. So one is conspiracy theories. And these are largely conspiracy theories about things that Spencer had mentioned: finance, capitalism, the way that banking works, international finance. And then above that, kind of international relations in some case. What is kind of called vulgar imperialism. I think Joshua referred to as vulgar imperialism. And the first time I went to Zuccotti Park, Occupy Wall Street, as Sina kind of mentioned, the first thing I saw right when I got off the kind of bus was a sign that said Google Jewish bankers. This was kind of an underskirting rhetoric. It wasn't the dominant one, and it certainly wasn't the one that took the main critique of capitalism that was in that space, but it was one that was present, and it's one that is present in a lot of left circles on the fringes. This is true inside the anti-war movement when I was first involved in organizing, when we saw 9/11 truth stuff that was there blaming a cabal of Jewish bankers for actually flying the planes in. So that's one space, and I think people are in general agreement about where that's at. People have seen it, especially when it's mimicked stuff on the right, and that has been dealt with to some degree, better or worse. The other form is anti-Semitic or problematic forms of anti-Zionism. And I'll be the first person to say that we shouldn't paint any kind of broad brush on this. I was involved in Students for Justice of Palestine and am a supporter of the BDS movement, but that's not to ignore the actual real problems that are inside those movements that paint Jewish power in a kind of Kabbalistic fashion, a conspiratorial fashion that step far beyond what's an actual reasonable critique of nationalism and statecraft, and into something that is kind of extra normal and positions Jews as these unique actors in historical events. This is not the entire history of left anti-Semitism, though. There's a long kind of tradition of populist anti-capitalism in the left that tries to simplify this kind of class dynamic, this conflict that's happening that's very real and about systemic inequality. And a lot of this comes from the creation of kind of modern capitalism and the inability of kind of working people to make sense of a lot of those functions, and then turning to older narratives and trying to modernize them and secularize them, and building on that deep well of history of anti-Semitism in Christianity, that's going back to the Crusades, that has a conspiratorial view of Jews, and particularly the way they reframe Jews' role in as quote unquote administrators of the state or in usury or other allegations. And so those narratives really did creep into the modern explanation for capitalism and the crisis that people were starting to make sense of. At the same time, it's also people looking for an explication for modernity in general, for how alienation they might feel from communities or this kind of idealized past of what it could be. And the narratives that they already had for about Jews played very well and created what we call a structural anti-Semitism. And this is something that has extended on through the years. in the language that we have for understanding the crisis and understanding dispossession, alienation, inequality, there is still a language of anti-Semitism there that even when it's not made explicit, helps to create sort of the structures that people use to make sense of these problems. And so in a lot of ways, that has been with the left as long as it has been with us and our ability to try and work through those issues. I'll say something that I'm not sure that the rest of the panelists would agree with, maybe it's something we can talk about in the discussion, but I do think that left anti-Semitism is fundamentally the same thing as all anti-Semitism. There are common narratives, and they're narratives about confronting the certain inadequacies of the current world, either from the left or from the right, but those structures are there on both sides. And so the uniqueness that the left has is that we're calling the question on it. The left is supposed to be the place where we confront oppression, and when it fails to live up to that, it stands out in a really particular way. This kind of brings up that there's been, at least since the 50s, kind of two ways that a lot of times that Jewish communities, and not just Jewish communities, but communities in general confronting anti-Semitism have approached it. One is political centrism, the idea that radicalism of any kind is dangerous for Jews because it opens the door for all these kind of either conspiratorial views or just instability that can confront communities. And when you have that door open, a lot of things can come in. It's not just like a liberatory approach. It can be a reactionary one as well. And the other one is, I like Joshua, you said theory of total victory, that nationalism is a really important piece of fighting anti-Semitism. And so this leaves us really out for people who are on the left or have radical critiques of things and also are critical of nationalism, don't think nationalism is really a good method for liberating anyone. And so I think the left has a lot of trouble actually making sense for how to look at the accusations that are coming in about anti-Semitism. There's a few particular reasons why I think the left has problems with it. One is that anti-Semitism works fundamentally different than other forms of anti-racism. I've had argued that it really shouldn't be discussed as a form of racism, and I think there's a lot of reason to go with that direction. And the way that it functions as a conspiracy theory, the way that it creates these sort of conspiracy modalities for people doesn't mirror the same forms of, or similar forms of racism in other communities. And so I think it's actually hard when the left has created an anti-racist praxis, or at least thinks it has, it doesn't really have the framework for deal with anti-Semitism. The other thing is that whiteness is a really core part of how we understand modern structures of power, white supremacy, and white Jews being white actually does throw a complication to that. And so it makes it difficult for see how that actually plays into our larger questions about anti-racism. The other one is that if we're talking about anti-Semitic dimensions and anti-Zionism, that just can't ignore the fact that there actually is an occupation happening and there actually is a movement to support Palestinians against that occupation. That's very real. And so if we're trying to critique pieces of anti-Zionism, it's also really hard when there's a really valid critique of Israeli state, Israeli policy, and those sorts of things that's only accelerating over since 67, obviously, but even in the last 20 years. But I think that one of the biggest problems is that the left is unable to see anti-Semitism. And so if we want to take seriously anti-Semitism on the left, the first thing has to be committing to the actual work of looking at, taking allegations seriously and not dismissing them. I was at an event once where Leon Pape spoke and said that any accusation of anti-Semitism against the anti-Zionist movement should be laughed off, never engaged with, never taken seriously. I think that's really poor advice. I think the reality is that even when there's disingenuous accusations, and there are a lot of them, it's something that we have to actually start taking seriously. And so we have to create a praxis for what it actually is, what we do about it, and how we hear people about that. Obviously, there needs to be a real intentional work on the left to take this discourse back from the right. I think as Spencer mentioned, right-wing organizations are happy to level accusations of anti-Semitism at the left. And so if we don't do the work of confronting it ourselves, then they are going to try and take that away from us. And that's actually been a big shift that has taken place in Jewish communities and in political spaces. And so if we want to be in control of that discourse, if we don't want to give in to disingenuous accusations, then we have to take care of it ourselves. We need to have principles when we're dealing with coalitions. This is true. When I was organizing in Palestinian circles, there was a lot of soft dealing with organizations that had problematic politics, that had conspiratorial politics or connections with groups that had other kinds of bigoted views. Those standards need to be upheld when we're doing that work, and we need to kind of question those allegiances. And we need to make it a conscious part of the work. you know, in supporting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, the reality is that a lot of Jewish communities are critical of that, and they won't participate. And people need to be conscious about what it's going to take to actually connect with Jewish communities, to represent Jewish views, to not do a good Jew, bad Jew dynamic that Keith had mentioned. We need to have a conscious approach to anti-Semitism that takes it seriously and sees that as a piece of the work. And I think there are parts of the left that are doing this very clearly. I think that the growth in anti-fascism, which sees anti-Semitism as a key part of the far right, has actually brought that back into those circles. And I'm seeing a lot of bigger focus on anti-Semitism as a key part of fighting the right and building that coalition. And so I think what we need to do with the left is to begin to communicate why anti-Semitism needs to be a central part of it. And that can't just be about the very real problem of Jewish safety. It has to be about how this affects movements in general. You know, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories are a falsehood. They do not give people a pathway to liberation. They do not help create strategies that confront capital, imperialism, or anything else. That's really important. And that disempowerment is going to keep movements spinning in circles. And I think confronting it will actually challenge the right in a really fundamental way. The current GOP has foundational anti-Semitic conspiracy theories inside of it. White nationalism sees it as its linchpin. If you want to confront those things, you have to confront anti-Semitism and make it a conscious part of the work. And if you want to engage and do it with Jewish communities, if you want to grow in that way, you also have to make it a conscious part of the work. So when we have a strong approach to anti-Semitism, we basically have a stronger left in general. If the left is supposed to be about liberation for all people, to be the confrontation of oppression, that has to include this as a piece of it. Otherwise, it's just going to fail before it launches. So I'll pass it back. I know we have a lot of questions coming. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Shane. I think that was a good breadth of different opinion about this subject from people on the left. So panelists, I think I'm going to ask a series of questions. Each question I'll ask and then the panelists will all answer. Just for ease, maybe let's go in the order that we gave the initial presentations, if that's okay. So Keith, Josh, Gina, Shane. And if you can answer, you know, these don't have to be immediate, but, you know, we have a lot of questions. So first, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. Let me ask all of you directly. Specifically in regards to the left, what's the relationship between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism? Keith?
I think there's no doubt that many Jews find anti-Zionism profoundly disquieting and as an existential threat to, particularly in the diaspora, to their escape from their escape from anti-Semitism. Now, regardless of whether those fears can be seen as justifiable or not, they are a fact. And it's a fact that is not going to be wished away. And as I said in my opening talk, saying to Jews that unless they reject Zionism, they cannot be welcomed in any kind of progressive coalitions, is actually counterproductive as much as anything else. Can I also talk about BDS under that? Because I think the two questions are often intertwined, the question of BDS and anti-Zionism. And I think you have some real dilemmas here, because whilst I don't believe that anti-Zionism and BDS are in and of themselves anti-Semitic, and I do not believe that any nationalism it should not be subject to criticism, and I do not believe that boycotts can be ruled out definitively with any one particular country. BDS becomes highly problematic in a world of diasporas, in the sense that the blowback from them, the impact that they have, may actually be much stronger on diaspora Jews than it will actually be on Israelis. So take a notional example of a cafeteria in a university or somewhere making a decision not to stock products made in Israel. Now, in some countries, that would mean a de facto, if not de jure, ban on kosher products in that canteen. Because in some countries, very limited kosher products are actually made in that country. Now, that is not the intention, but that would be a blowback, a form of blowback that has to be taken very seriously. And when BDS is treated in a sweeping way without any consideration for that, without negotiating that, then it becomes highly problematic. And here is where the comparison with South Africa, I think, is useful. One of the great things about the struggle against apartheid in South Africa was that the white South Africans, at least those who supported the apartheid regime, were a negligible diaspora. So that political struggle could happen outside of South Africa with relative little worry that people there, minorities, would be persecuted as a result. That's not the case. That's not the case with Israel. Now, that's inconvenient, it's difficult, but it does suggest that if there is going to be a BDS policy, it at least has to take seriously and not try and wish away the issue of blowback on diaspora communities. The same goes for debates about anti-Zionism. You cannot assume that this is going to be a debate that is going to impact on Israel alone. It impacts on people in the diaspora who may themselves feel highly vulnerable.
You know, I feel this question quite as a quite personal one, because as a Jewish anti-nationalist leftist, and also someone who cares about Jewish tradition, I am strongly opposed to the Zionist attempt to make a nation state the teleology of a millennia old tradition. And so the equation of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism frustrates me immensely, because Judaism existed long before Zionism, and Jewish anti-Zionism has existed as longer than the state of Israel has existed. I also am I'm troubled a little bit just in the way that we've been speaking about recruiting Jews into the left, because I think it doesn't reflect at least my personal experience growing up in a conservative Jewish religious community, where white American Jews in the suburbs in many instances are not a potential constituency for the left. They are part of the reactionary alignment in the United States. And I am not convinced that any amount of argumentation, that any amount of soft pedaling, or any amount of equivocation on issues around the occupation would bring those people or the people I grew up with into a broader progressive political camp. I think there are absolutely strategic questions around BDS about its efficacy. It is apparent, at least to me, that BDS has not managed to achieve its goal, that the paradigm of divestment modeled on the South African anti-apartheid movement may not work for Israel in the 21st century, where Israel's strategic industries are hard to divest from, and also where financialization has made divestment much more difficult than it was in the 1980s when you could divest from direct holdings. I think, so I would prefer to deal with the question of BDS on its strategic grounds. And I think attempts to tar the BDS movement as inherently anti-Semitic are just profoundly wrong. And it's an attempt to speak, it's a reductionist attempt, I think, to whittle down or to make Zionism an inherent part of Judaism. I recognize that it is for many Jews, and that's okay. But I don't think that it's certainly not for, I just am strongly opposed to that. That's how I will end that there.
Zina?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, when we look at the relationship between these two, we have to acknowledge that there is, in fact, a relationship. And I think we have to look back in history and also take into account that, as we know from racism, anti-Semitism can take coded forms. And looking back in history, after 45, anti-Semitism, at least in many Western countries, became something that most people would not openly admit to. And the formation of Israel in 48 became one way of putting forward resentment in a seemingly legitimate fashion. And Israel, you know, became not just a state, but it became the collective Jew. And as we know, not just from history, but also from contemporary empirical research, there is oftentimes a correlation between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. So anti-Zionism, and this holds particularly true for Europe, can be a form of expressing anti-Semitism. And of course, we cannot distinguish the two in a clear-cut fashion. All we can do is look at somehow orientative guiding lines and the wider context. So who says what to whom and with what intention? And to give you an example, so a sentence like "what Israel does to the Palestinians is what the Nazis did to the Jews" takes on, I would say, a very different meaning when it's uttered by, let's say, the son of German perpetrators trying to deflect guilt and responsibility for the Holocaust, or by a Syrian Palestinian refugee who never learned school what the Holocaust actually was and has been raised with Israel as an immediate neighbor. And this, you know, this historical comparison is still factually wrong, but in the former case, I would say it's certainly anti-Semitic, and in the latter case, we need to know more. And I think in general, there are two guiding lines that are helpful, and I know both of them are not much liked in the left because they are perceived as right-wing tools. But I think they're useful. One is the so-called 3Ds, so demonization of Israel, especially by using anti-Semitic tropes, delegitimization of the right to exist, and double standards. All of these can point to anti-Semitic forms of anti-Zionism. They don't have to. And I think it makes this, but they point to taking a closer look at what's being said. And I think the double standard is particularly interesting when we look at BDS, because it honestly baffles me that this is a global campaign with no similar campaigns against Turkey, China, Iran, many other states. And of course, I have explanations for that, but it still baffles me in the same way that it baffles me how many people are against this particular nation state when they seem to have no problem with nation states whatsoever in general. So guiding line number one. The other is, in fact, I would say the IRA definition. I know it's come under much criticism as of late, some of it justified, some of it unjustified, but it actually has an interesting line in it that gives examples, you know, it gives examples for anti-Semitism related to Israel, and it says that these depend on the overall context. And it's a line that also amongst critics is often overlooked, but I think this overall context means we need to know more about the situation. We cannot have a checklist approach to anti-Zionist anti-Semitism, but we have to be aware that it exists, and we have to ask the question, who says what to whom and with what intention, in order to know more. So tricky business.
Shane?
Hey, so there's a lot there. So I know it's going to be an unsatisfying answer, but there are some forms of anti-Zionism that have been historically anti-Semitic and others that have not. And I'm not convinced that there's going to be a clear definition that we'll be able to pick, the IRA definition or some other, that's going to actually delineate those and with any clarity. The reality is that at least I can speak for myself and other people I interact with, is that universal anti-nationalism has to be at the core of that. A critique of nation states as a solution to historic oppression is really critical. That's why I use the term binationalism rather than anti-Zionism usually. And to obviously the attempts to paint all of these Palestinian solidarity activists as anti-Semitic, particularly with the very real conditions that they're fighting against, is problematic. To kind of go through the list of here is the kinds of anti-Zionism that are really deeply rooted in anti-Semitism are the conspiratorial kinds, the ones that see Zionism as this worldwide force far beyond the reaches of Israel itself, that sees Zionism as a force controlling governments, controlling banks, things like that, that really are extensions of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories themselves, and also ones that hold Israel to standards that they wouldn't hold anybody else. I think Sina had mentioned that. There's an element of arbitrariness to international solidarity work and to organizing in general, where people kind of do have to depict one particular actor and confront it and organize around it. And so I've often been thrown this, why is Israel picked and not this, you know, 25 other countries? Well, if we pick 25 countries and organize campaigns against them simultaneously, they would all lose simultaneously. And so I think that there's a certain amount of like looking at one thing and looking at who's organized internationally and who they can collaborate with. That doesn't give a pass for its behavior and doesn't give a pass for unreasonable standards, but it does explain to a degree why those things happen. I think Keith mentioned a bit of what I kind of call disparate impacts. looking at exactly how it does. I keep kosher on holidays. If I was to follow really strict BDS rules, there's no way that would be possible. And so those things have to be actually looked at, and that's not looked at. And I think that's an example of the left's unwillingness to see Jews as the subjective category that needs to be engaged with in that way. And I think to Josh's point a bit, or a piece of Josh's point, I think about this a lot of ways, like that Enzo Traversos and others have called the end of Jewish modernity, where there has been a political shift in that. And I don't know that we can just shift back. I do know, though, that part of that shift seems to be the unwillingness to connect, that feel connected to the left. I don't want the left to capitulate on core principles so as to recruit those constituencies back. But I do think we need to be aware of what those experiences are. And our critique of centrism and political nationalism are, can it be universal and be principled in that way?
Okay, the next question is going to be that anti-Semitism occurs in countries with wildly different histories and demographics. These include Germany, which is, of course, a post-National Socialist country, the UK, which is a former imperialist power in the Middle East, and the United States, which both had a different role in World War II, and today, unlike many of these other countries, has a very large and active Jewish community. How do these differences affect the various national discourses on left-wing anti-Semitism? How does it affect left-wing anti-Semitism, and how does it affect the discourses about it?
I alluded to this in the start of my talk earlier. I think there is sometimes a problem in that because we are also globally engaged, we often intervene in each other's struggles without necessarily understanding the differences. And I think that is a particular problem with the US and the UK. I think that many people in both the US and the UK are often unaware of the degree of differences between the two countries. And certainly British Jews and American Jews often don't appreciate the differences between the British and the American Jewish community. And you saw this a lot during the Corbyn years, in that it was fascinating to watch that you saw a lot of people in America on the American left defending Jeremy Corbyn as if he were Bernie Sanders. When, of course, Bernie Sanders is Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn is Jeremy Corbyn, and they have different backgrounds. They're not the same people. I think Spencer also mentioned the UK's history as the imperial power in pre-state Palestine and its wider imperial history. I don't think that impacts on the discourse in this country quite as much as one might think. I think it's a very big deal for some Palestinians in the UK, but I think for absolutely reasonable reasons. I think it's a historic thing for many Jews, but beyond that, the widespread lack of understanding of the imperial legacy in Britain extends to this too. I think the sort of thing that to talk in general terms, the ways in which anti-Semitism on the left differs from country to country is dependent in part on the size and the nature of the Jewish community, on the size and the nature of the Palestinian community and the Muslim communities, and also, and I think this is critical, the wider position of the left in society. In the UK compared to the US, the Jewish community is much stronger, but also in the UK, the left is much smaller and the left is much stronger. What is seen as far left politics in America is often seen as something much less radical in the UK. And certainly whilst right-wing populism is a rising force in the UK, it hasn't yet, thankfully, reached the level of the terrifying level that it has in America, nor is there a UK analog of the Christian right, which in fact most countries don't have an analog of the American Christian right. So all these things have to be taken into account. And whilst I do, and that's one of the reasons, and someone mentioned IRA earlier, one of the issues with IRA that is often not discussed is the international bit. And whilst there are commonalities between anti-Semitism in many different countries, the idea of a single monitoring procedure that can be adapted from country to country and country, even the alternatives to IRA as well, is not impossible, but problematic without a deep contextual awareness of the conditions that pervade in different countries. And often that knowledge is lacking.
I'd like to say that I think the substantial differences in national histories are in part why I'm reluctant to use a term that would describe anything common between them. I think the position of Jews in contemporary United States is so different from that of Jews in Germany that to compare their experiences and to use a term to describe what they might face as the same, I think does a disservice to analysis. That has to do with the very divergent and very different histories that Jews have had in the United States versus Germany. In the United States, with very few exceptions, Jews have never been racialized as Jews vis-a-vis the state. They were recognized as a protected religious minority in many instances, and they arrived in a settler colony where there was both an indigenous people who against whom a genocide was committed and black slaves who occupied the position of the subjugated racial other. That is not the situation that existed in Europe, and the relationship between Jews and European nationalities is much different than that of the relationship between Jews and American nationality. If you take, for example, what Moshe Pastone writes about in his theory of anti-Semitism, that Jews in post-emancipation Europe came to embody abstract citizens as such in comparison to like the Volk or the national citizens of France or Germany. America is a country that has only really, I mean, we can argue about this, it's been contested, but part of the structure of white supremacy in the United States is based on there being a abstract citizenship that's predicated on a silence of black subjugation. It is a very different reality. And so, and for that reason, I think that I'm resistant to comparison. I think that the obligations of commemoration and historical memory in Germany with regards to the Holocaust are quite different. It's just, there is no comparison to what Jews experienced in the United States. I'd also like to add that I think immigration history in the United States is often this great silence, and a very substantial portion of Jews in America arrived in the country prior to the Holocaust, prior to the 1924 Immigration Act. The history of Jews in America is one that is separate in many instances from the history of the Holocaust in Europe. And I think that to retroactively graft that history back onto a community that didn't experience something, I just think is poor analysis. I think part of what the left needs to do is not strive towards more abstraction, but to strive towards more accurate description of what actually exists. And I think through a more greater clarity about what is historical reality and both experience reality, I think we'll arrive at a better politics.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this question of national comparisons is actually one of the most overlooked topics in left discussions, because we are not a global movement so much anymore often enough. And in the US left, I've actually often encountered that in the form of, oh, you're from Germany, of course you have this thing with anti-Semitism, historical guilt. And against that, I would always argue that no, it's a universal task for leftists to counter anti-Semitism and racism. And it's also a topic for Jews and for non-Jews. And that also some of the origins of left anti-Semitism, namely this you know, personalized critique of capitalism, as well as like a vulgar anti-imperialism, they originate in very global traditions of leftist thinking. They go back to, you know, yeah, well, global history of the left. And yet at the same time, these histories are specific, and that affects our view. So in Germany, and I've mentioned that before, anti-Zionism has become one of the main and mainstream ways to articulate anti-Semitism, both in the left, but also in other parts of society, due to the fact that there's a public taboo on other forms of anti-Semitism. And I think these national differences are also interesting when we look at Israel as a projection screen, and anti-Zionism as what Shulamit Volkov called a subcultural code. So in the UK, and Keith, you hinted at that, with its specific history of British imperialism, my sense is that a large part of the left sees this legacy at play when talking about the plight of the Palestinians. In France, the history of French colonialism is brought up. In the US, my sense is that the history of racism and slavery has brought this very strong black-white divide. So what, you know, what W.E.B. Du Bois called the color line, and that's a kind of become a central analytical tool that's applied to Jews, and it's also applied to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So that's seen as, you know, this suppressed population of color against the white ruler elite. And in social movement studies, we would speak about frames. So imperialism, colonialism, or whiteness as frames, somehow the glasses through which we look at a situation, yet none of them explains the complexity of the situation. But they contribute to forms of anti-Semitic, anti-Zionism, but through different nationally framed different leftist perspective, if that makes sense. And maybe to add to that, I think this lack of a global perspective is also lacking, not just when we look at left anti-Semitism, but when we look at anti-Semitism from the left. So in the US, I often also encountered, and this has changed in the last few years, but a few years back, I often encountered, well, anti-Semitism is not a problem. And this, I found that to be a very America or US-centric position in a time when, you know, you have raging anti-Semitism in Eastern Europe, based in anti-Christian, anti-Judaism. You have anti-Semitism in the Arab world. You have the rise of Islamism. So you do have global anti-Semitic movements. And while this may not be the case or have been the case in the US a few years ago, you know, this is a global situation. And, you know, we should look beyond our national frames and start to try and fight racism and anti-Semitism everywhere, especially in times when a lot of these movements, whether on the left or the Islamists or the right, are globally connected.
Hey, so I think that to draw something that Joshua had said is that I think there's an open question about the similarities between what we're calling anti-Semitism in one place and time and anti-Semitism in another place and time, or maybe even a bigger question about what the term anti-Semitism is used to refer to in terms of anti-Jewish oppression. Is all forms of anti-Jewish oppression called anti-Semitism, or all kind of indications of it? I think that's an open question. I think it's debatable. I think the idea of the national context is important, but I also think it's important to think a little bit about how globalization has collapsed some of that. So we're talking, I think Spencer had mentioned anti-Semitism in countries that have very little Jews or have very little interaction with Jews, which is honestly a typical thing that has existed in periods of anti-Semitism for hundreds of years. I think on the left, Moshe Pistone has talked a lot about the ways that people define themselves in the absence of Jews or as the antithesis of Jews. David Nuremberg did this in a more kind of university historical way. And so I think that that's a really common piece of the exported kind of narrative of anti-Semitism, the conspiracy theory narrative, or the ways that people are defining themselves against what they see as contemporary modernity or whatever they kind of construct that to mean. But that is different historically. And I think it is different geographically and historically. And so in the US, for example, outside of really big spectacular acts of violence, it's not the same kind of, like when I go to synagogue, I don't have security guards at the gates like I've seen in, you know, France or in Germany. And so those things should be considered. Though I do think that like there is a certain common thread in contemporary anti-Semitic rhetoric and thinking and conspiracy theories that does create a certain common experience. And so I think that can be useful, though I don't want to overstate its significance in everyone's local context.
Okay, thank you. The questions have gone on a little bit longer than I hoped, so let me ask the big one of the longer questions. What strategies have worked best in your experience to educate and mitigate against left-wing anti-Semitism? How could the left more constructively approach this issue? And or is there or should there be a distinctly leftist approach to left-wing anti-Semitism? I'll let you all pick whichever corner of that you want to and address it.
Because I'm a fairly miserable person, I'm much better at dealing with what doesn't work than what works. I'll tell you what doesn't work. During the Corbyn years, when the party was, when the anti-Semitism controversy was running out of control, Jeremy Corbyn would make videos at Passover with a Passover message to Jews. And that would involve him when the involved a Jewish young person on the left sharing her family's Haggadah and talking about the social justice message of Pesach, which is something that Jeremy Corbyn is clearly warming to. Now, it's ironic given that I have a lot of time for that particular tradition, but this was a disastrous move. It was a disastrous move because Jeremy Corbyn had absolutely no need to work on his relationship with that particular section of the Jewish left. What it came across instead was a validation of a particular kind of Jew. Rather, and there were other examples of this as well. Now, even when he was validating my own kind of Judaism, I would put my head in my hands when I saw this sort of thing, because it was absolutely disastrous. And the reason it's disastrous is because it was easy. It's easy for Jews to try and bring in people and tell them about our traditions, particularly our progressive traditions, and try and develop a relationship that way. But it's not there that the problem lies. The more successful efforts, or at least the ideal that I would suggest, is something that is massively cynical. A cynical approach in which people try for tactical reasons to try and create a serviceable working relationship. And there were people on the left of the Labour Party and in the Corbyn project who did do that, who were not enveloped in this controversy to the extent that other people were. And this is what I mean by restraining love. It is Corbyn's love that was his major problem. And it is love that is often the problem in progressive circles. Not everywhere, but in some of those areas. So what I've been suggesting throughout my talk is suggesting a much more brittle, difficult, cynical politics that draws coalitions together for strategic reasons without any illusions about how the other is. A politics in which people appear on the same picket line or demonstration on Monday in order to create the conditions in which they could oppose each other at opposing demonstrations on Tuesday. This is what I think is the real answer to this question. And it's not very palatable and it's not very nice. And I don't seem to get a lot of traction when I suggest it, but I have seen it actually working. I have seen it actually working. And notably, people on the left who have fallen into sort of clearly anti-Semitic thinking, the ones who pull back from that and who learn from that and who don't repeat it are usually the ones who don't have pre-existing relationships with the Jewish left. Right? Because when they do have pre-existing relations with the Jewish left, they can take refuge in that and not really do the accounting. My final thing we'll say is that I'm not a Christian. I don't really care about the quality of people's souls. I care about behavior. I care about discourse. It doesn't matter to me what people think of Jews. It doesn't matter to me what they think of me or any other kind of Jew. What matters to me is how we work together in a teeth-gritted, sullen solidarity kind of way to make a world that is better for all of us.
I'm not very good at making suggestions. That's partially why I left a movement space and became a journalist, because I didn't want to have that kind of responsibility anymore. I think that we are currently living at a time of immense conflict within Jewish communities. And I think any politics that deals with anti-Semitism has to recognize that there is no consensus about what Jewish flourishing looks like among Jews. There is immense tension, infighting, and conflict. And so and addressing left-wing anti-Semitism would have to take into account that there is no way actually to come up with a political strategy that would appeal to all Jews, because certainly in the United States, many Jews, and particularly Jewish institutions, are on the political right. This is just the reality of what the alignment is in America. And there is no way, as far as I can see, around that. I used to want, when I was in an organizing world, I used to want to kind of save American Judaism from its descent into right-wing nationalism. I used to think that was possible. I do not believe that is possible anymore. At the same time, I think one of the things that brings down left movements around anti-Semitism is simple ignorance. There is tremendous ignorance on the US left about Jews, about the Middle East, about foreign policy generally, and political education could go a long way. To me, that's the best way around that. I actually don't think that many of the instances of quote-unquote anti-Semitic remarks made by, say, Congress people in the United States were actually anti-Semitic, but they certainly were ignorant of how one would talk about Jews in public as a politician. And I think that a certain kind of awareness about what it actually means to talk about Jewish issues could go a long way towards preventing upsurges of anti-Semitism. This was also my feeling when I was as a reporter covering the Corbyn incident, and felt like if he just had better advisors — of course, we know Keith did a good job at explaining why he didn't have better advisors — he might have been able to avoid some of the pitfalls that he fell into. I don't think there are any easy answers here. I will say one last thing. I think what will only make things worse is an attempt to use Jewish suffering to put down the Palestinian cause. And I think that the fact that the IHRA has become a tool to silence criticism of Israel has tremendously damaged the fight against anti-Semitism. It's a transparently instrumental definition that has been adopted in part with the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs to hamstring BDS activism. That is transparent to everyone. And the fact that Jewish suffering in Europe and the United States is instrumentalized in the cause of fighting a nonviolent movement for Palestinian freedom, I think in the end hurts Jews.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have time to discuss the definitions. And I'm certainly aware of the wrongfully applied IRA definition. At the same time, I think it makes sense to kind of look at the application in a different sense than the actual definition. But given the question of counter strategies, I mean, as some of you may know, there in Germany, in the German left, there have been crazily heated debates around anti-Semitism. They started in the 90s. They helped the emergence of a subcurrent that is sometimes labeled anti-Deutsch or anti-German, that's somewhat inspired by Marx, by Frankfurt School critical theory, by Moshe Postone, and a small current that actually, I would say, forced parts of the radical left to deal with anti-Semitism, and partly through very provocative debate, through confrontation. And it certainly was the opposite of searching for common ground. Interestingly enough, that was sometimes fruitful for changing what it means to be socialized into the radical left. And I would say that today, on a list of kind of antis that you have to deal with when you're kind of socialized into the radical left, when you're a young street anti-fascist kid, anti-Semitism is definitely on it. And there is awareness of what the pitfalls of left anti-Semitism are. So at the time, confrontation, provocation, and those were combined with repetition. So again and again, bringing up certain topics. I'm not sure if this is a universal recipe, but I think, and this comes back to our question before, I think it makes sense to be in touch with international comrades and see what worked for them. And it makes sense to look back in history and see what worked in the past. So when I look at US history, what strikes me as a really interesting phase is the debates in the second women's movement and the new social movements of the 80s, when Jewish lesbians and other Jewish feminists felt ill at ease with the anti-Zionism that was common at the time, and demanded that what was, you know, right for other minorities at the time, that blacks were the ones to define what racism is, to them, this felt like anti-Semitism. And I'm to this day quite amazed at the level of debate that went on 30 years ago. And I wonder where it went in the US context. So looking back, talking to international comrades, looking at back in history, taking seriously Jewish experiences, and not just as Keith said in the very beginning, loving one particular image of Jew. I think that's how you put it, and I really like that. And I'm again here. I find this double standard interesting because my sense is that the English-speaking left is much quicker to acknowledge that yes, women should have a say in what sexism is, and people of color should have if a person to them, then we should at least be worried. We should at least show interest. We shouldn't reject that. And my sense is that with anti-Semitism, it is much more legitimate to say, no, this is not anti-Semitic. So I would say that is also an important element in the struggle against that, rather than rejecting, be open to the fact that something could be anti-Semitic.
Yeah, so everyone made me depressed and cynical about our ability to do this. I think it's a couple of things. I think the first thing is that the approach for this on the left is not in essence just about Jews. It's about the left itself and whether or not they want accurate, real liberatory projects and basically applying the amount of critique and standards that are actually going to get there. So I think what's actually useful is to go back to basics and a lot of like organizing projects and political ideas and think about where ideas and positions and strategies have actually come from and hold them to a certain amount of standards. That's true in Solidarity with Palestinians. It's true really, if anything, about not kind of, succumbing to what Spencer sort of called the easy answer, the emotive conspiratorial answer that can feel very satisfying because it puts a face on things but doesn't actually lead us any closer. So I think that's an important project of the left. It's not just true here. It's going to be true everywhere. I think it's true it's going to be important to make clear what the consequences of anti-Semitism actually are, which I think is often obscured. It's obscured particularly in the US where it's not sometimes not as visible or it's doesn't have the same history as it does internationally. But that needs to be discussed. So it's seen as something that's important enough to deal with. I think as Zina mentioned, like the idea of questioning Jews' commentary on anti-Semitism is a lot more common kind of thing than it would be in other forms of bigotry. That needs to be kind of called into question. But the approach to it as anti-racism has to have a certain amount of universalism to it where these projects are seen as part of the larger piece of it. And I don't think we're going to just move along Jewish organizations, like Joshua was saying. I don't think we're going to move along a lot of establishment organizations or really any, because that's not our project. Our project is organizing people. And so I think having a sense of a universal anti-racism, anti-nationalism, that one I think has in it the ability of not succumbing to anti-Semitic narratives, of having the ability to create a counter narrative for how we deal with those things. And I think integrating anti-Semitism into that project should be the big task of it. And how we do that, I think, is a different question.
Okay, thank you. As the ending of this, I'm gonna try something a little different than we usually do. I'm gonna ask a lightning round if all of the panelists could turn their mics on. I would like each of you to answer, if you can, yes, no, or it's complicated. Okay? All right. Frequently, people insist Palestinians should be at least part arbiters of what left-wing anti-Semitism consists of, even if it's only tangentially related to them, and this happened with this panel. Is it anti-Semitic to insist on this?
Complicated.
No.
No.
I don't think I understand the question.
People insist that Palestinians be part of the arbiters of what's anti-Semitic or anti-Semitic in the left, that they have to be part of the process of understanding this or judging this. Not sure?
They can be like anyone else. I mean, a correct definition is not a matter of positionality.
Okay. Spencer, are you asking if we agree with that statement or if that claim is anti-Semitic?
Is that claim anti-Semitic? Is it anti-Semitic to insist on this? Okay, second. Is it anti-Semitic to refuse to allow two-staters to take part in coalitions and events which are not related to Israel and Palestine.
Getting there.
Yes. They're Jewish.
No.
I'm going to go with it's complicated.
Okay. Three. Frequently, when questions of anti-Semitism on the left are raised, even before the details are discussed, you'll immediately hear certain leftists say it's a smear or it's not real anti-Semitism. Is it anti-Semitic to make these statements before you even, when people make these statements before they've even heard the argument, is this anti-Semitic?
Yes.
Often yes.
It's stupid, but it's not anti-Semitism. And not all stupidity is anti-Semitism.
Zina?
Yeah, mostly.
Okay. I do like what Josh says. All stupidity about Jews in Israel is not anti-Semitic.
There's so much stupidity. It's just
there is a lot of stupidity. All right. A common claim that you will hear is that Zionism is anti-Semitic. Is it anti-Semitic to claim that Zionism is anti-Semitic?
Yes.
It's extremely stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going with stupid. I don't think it's much beyond stupid, to be honest.
Okay. And the last question, this one, answer good, fine, or poor. How does the left deal with anti-Semitism in general?
Oh, poor.
Poor.
Depends on the country.
Depends on
mostly
the day.
Poor though.
Josh?
Depends on the day.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone on the panel for participating in this. I think it's been a very good discussion that we've had, and I want to thank everybody for watching. I do hope that this discussion will help, even in some kind of a modest way, to help the left address this ongoing and, in my mind, very vexing problem. Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Spencer, for organizing this, and thanks for Evo for hosting.
This was a discussion of anti-Semitism on the left that was initially recorded on Tuesday, May 4th, 2021 at Evo Institute for Jewish Research. This discussion was moderated by Spencer Sunshine. The panels featured Zina Arnold, Shane Burley, Keith Kahn-Harris, and Joshua Leffer. This was VMN Volume 3, Episode 23. VMN was formerly known as Vermont Movement News and can be found on podcast apps as Vermont Movement News.